extractive industries.
Thanks very much. So yes, so as I mentioned, I mostly work on humanitarian issues, but today I'm going to talk a little bit about our extractive industry program at Oxfam. So I have no relationships to disclose. So I think the being particularly in New Orleans, the link between extractive industries and environmental health has unfortunately become all too clear in recent years. But I wanted to talk a little bit about why an organization such as Oxfam, which is a humanitarian and development and human rights organization, works on extractive industries. I think the first real reason is that over 60% of the world's poorest people live in countries that are actually rich in natural resources. There's been a lot of talk about the resource curse, and I think that really holds to be true when we look at those countries and find that the people who live in those countries rarely share in the wealth of, from those resources. At the same time, there's a growing shift from developed countries, which have been donors in international assistance for many years, away from the provision of funds and more towards efforts to engage in trade as a means of promoting development. A great example is Canada, which has recently merged its trade office with its development office. And, you know, looking at that, at the same time, minerals are the number one export of many countries that are poor countries. There's a huge power imbalance and an information, access to information imbalance between people who are living in countries that are rich in natural resources and countries and the governments of those countries as well as companies. Poor communities often have little or no say in what happens. They often don't even hear about an extractive industry project until it's even begun. And of course, extractive industries can have really clear and direct impacts on poor communities, including health impacts, environmental degradation impacts, displacement, land grabs for access to resources, human rights violations, conflict. WHO, the World Health Organization, did a very interesting discussion paper a few years back in 2010 on managing the public health impacts of natural resource extraction activity. And so it highlights a number of these public health challenges, and I'll just go quickly through them. There's issues like environmental pollution, chemical contamination of air, water, soil, and that leads to increased likelihood of cancer, neurological diseases, congenital anomalies, respiratory diseases. There's also the degradation, destruction of resources and ecosystems upon which communities rely for livelihoods, particularly thinking about things like farming, fishing, areas where people basically lose their jobs because of extractive industry, basically taking out huge amounts of money from the community. And then finally, there's, and I thought this one was particularly interesting as well, the population influxes which tend to accompany these large extractive industry projects has a whole set of other public health implications associated with it, and that includes risks of infectious disease outbreaks, including cholera, STIs, respiratory infections, related to overcrowding and overburdened infrastructure, as well as changes to community social networks, social cohesion. You see a lot of movement of very often young men to be involved in extractive industries at the lower levels and what implications that has. Just another word about Oxfam, and I'll talk a little bit more about the goal of our project and sort of our ways of working. It's basically to ensure that these projects respect the rights of citizens and contribute to poverty reduction as part of an environmentally and socially responsible form of development. Important to note that Oxfam doesn't accept any money from extractive industry companies. Oxfam America doesn't accept any money from the U.S. government either in order to maintain our independence as part of the lobbying work. And I should have mentioned at the beginning that my role in Washington, D.C. Is advocacy to the U.S. government. We're neither for or against extractive industries in principle. They exist, and we're trying to make them more accountable to the communities where they work. We support bottom-up local to global influencing efforts. And our strategies are both sort of insider and outsider. Outsider is the kind of classic NGO campaigning that you become accustomed to, but insider efforts as well include doing things like we often buy very small numbers of shares in extractive companies so that we can attend investor meetings and be able to raise our voice in those internal ways as well. And we're working to support transition to more sustainable forms of development. I thought that graph about peak oil was a really great example of the lack of sustainability in this sector, and of course to promote gender justice in all areas of our work. So a couple of pillars of the work that we do. The first is human rights and FPIC, or free, prior, and informed consent. This relates back to what I was saying about the lack of information, this massive information gap that communities often suffer from when extractive industries happen in their communities. I mentioned some of the negative impacts of extractives, but really trying to focus on the right of communities to know what's going on and actually to be involved in decision making, taking those decisions about whether or not extraction is going to take place away from the sort of halls of power in the country capitals and down to the community level. This is a picture of one of those outsider strategies I was talking about, a protest, a stunt we did in front of the Securities and Exchange Commission in Washington, I believe. It's in front of Chevron's offices here in Louisiana. There's another picture later on of one in front of the SEC. Transparency is not monkey business. So we're working to build the transparency in the system by increasing the public disclosure by companies. A lot of these companies pay huge amounts of money, often off the books, to countries in which they're working to get deals done. And that really breeds a lack of accountability throughout the entire process. So we're hoping that by exposing some more of this information, we can eventually lead to better development outcomes. I'll talk a little bit more about what we've done to promote greater transparency, but that has included advocacy in the U.S., in the EU, and Australia to promote disclosure. Also to monitor implementation of contracts, tax. We often find that some of the richest companies in the world are some of the lowest payers of taxes. And those are tax revenue that would go to the countries in which they're working and instead doesn't benefit them. Just quickly, our theory of change, that greater transparency and free, prior, and informed consent of communities will lead to increased government accountability, and along with more extractive revenues invested in affected communities will lead to improved public health and other social goods. This is a quick little map of where we're working around the world on extractive industries programming. So, speaking about a couple of different avenues of change that we've pursued, the first is through legislation. The most famous here, particularly here in the U.S., is the Dodd-Frank law, which really represented the U.S. taking the lead on these issues of disclosures. It's a little bit text-heavy, but basically the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, which people heard about in the context of the sort of scandals around Wall Street behavior, has this provision that was introduced as an amendment by Senator Patrick Leahy to require extractive companies to disclose, for those in this case listed on a U.S. stock exchange, to disclose payments that they make to the U.S. as well as the foreign governments where they operate. It's also known as the Cardin-Lugar Amendment, if you've heard of it in that term. This is the first law in a major capital market to require the disclosure of payments, and so this is a really big deal. Interestingly, it received support not just from NGOs like Oxfam, but also from members of Congress, from business leaders, as well as from investors who cumulatively are worth over $1 trillion, people basically wanting to know where their money is going. But there's been delays in implementation, unfortunately. This is an article from back in September when Oxfam sued the SEC, which made us very popular in Washington. We first sued the SEC actually in 2012. After the law passed, there was a requirement that the SEC develop, the Securities Exchange Commission develop a law to actually regulate how this law would be implemented. The SEC just basically dragged its feet and didn't really move on it. Finally, we sued them, and then they issued a law. Unfortunately, that rule was struck down by a U.S. District Court, and then the SEC has again delayed moving forward on proposing a law. In the meantime, therefore the new lawsuit. In the meantime, a lot of other countries have moved forward following the U.S. precedent. We call it a global transparency tide. Cases in the EU approving new laws in line with the U.S. approach. In the U.K., at the G8, there was an unequivocal endorsement of global mandatory disclosures. Even in Canada, which I mentioned earlier, the Prime Minister backed mandatory disclosure of these types of payments. And interestingly, it has the full backing of Canadian Mining Industry Association. We're hoping to have legislation by 2015. IFC, Swiss government. Then we've also done a lot of work in popular campaigning. I'll give you a couple of quick examples, one in Peru and one in Ghana. The woman pictured here is called Rosa Amaro. She is a community leader in a small mountain village called La Arroya in Peru. And she's been speaking out, and along with a lot of other people, with support from Oxfam and other groups internationally, on the really toxic impacts of the smelter operation by a company called Do-Run Peru in her community. It was found that 90% of children in that town had lead in their blood. In Ghana, we've also done a lot of work with the civil society platform on oil and gas, trying to make sure that the country doesn't relive a lot of the negative experiences of the gold mining industry in that country, particularly given that oil is expected to bring Ghana over $1 billion a year in revenue over the next 20 years. This is just a little bit more background on Doe Run. I'll just skip that. Again, in Ghana, the oil for food campaign was a really successful campaign that aimed and succeeded in getting Ghana to devote 15% of its budget from oil to agriculture, particularly mostly focused on small-scale agriculture and agricultural modernization to benefit small-scale farmers. Prior to this campaign, the Office of the President actually received 15% of the revenues, which was more than the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education combined. So progress is slow, but it does come, and it's by really a combination of these two strategies that we're aiming to move forward. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Noah. And could we get a round of applause for all of our speakers and their very informative presentations? Okay, we're opening the floor now for questions. Does anyone have any questions for any of our speakers? Okay, while you're thinking of questions, I'm going to put in a plug for an event later this evening where you can talk to hopefully some of our speakers who may be able to attend, but also other professionals in the area of international environmental health. This evening in R05, in this building, there will be an event sponsored by both the International Health Student Committee and the International Health Section. It will begin with a dinner and an award ceremony and then culminate with a networking event and a raffle, where books that are donated by the authors, the publishers, or just public health professionals that are interested in those fields have donated books. They'll be there to network with you. You'll see a lot of leaders and students repping this green sticker. If you're interested in attending the event, again, that's this evening from 6 until 9, you can come up here. There are pamphlets here and a sign-up sheet to be entered into the raffle. Now that that's over, does anyone have any questions for our speakers? Okay, one more round of applause. Thank you.